Hi, welcome, live podcast number 6, Engine House Training. Kind of a unique podcast this week, kind of based off demand and requests from some of the viewers off of one of our lead instructors, Kyle Sanders, Active Killer, Bridging the Gap class. So looking forward to a good conversation with some subject matter experts in what has become, unfortunately, a necessary field that we got to be trained and prepared in, that we hopefully never need the skill set. I do want to start off, though, with a little bit of housekeeping. All the live podcasts are starting to get up on the podcast page. Thanks, Gary, for taking care of that. Podcast 1 and 2 should be up. If you're having trouble getting them, though, you may need to unsubscribe to the podcast link and then resubscribe to Engine House Training Podcast. And then all the new ones will be in there, and we are going to move over all the old ones to our new system. So check that out if you missed some of the earlier weeks of our quarantine live podcast. Last week, while we were actually recording our show, there was a line of duty death in the west side of the state. And I wanted to start off with having a moment of silence for that fallen member. All right, Kyle, tell us a little bit of what we're going to be talking about. We'll let you go around the room and make your quick introductions, and then we'll get rolling.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. Like I said, this was one of these things that Gary and I know you've and other people brought up and talking about, and it's something that is still actually fairly new to a lot of the fire districts and fire service around us. The more places we go and talk to a lot of people, it's one of those that gets discussed and kind of put in the back pocket of that's never going to happen here, so it's better to ignore it, and we're just not going to discuss it because a lot of political reasons too that people just try to ignore this. I have asked several people to come on that are kind of subject area experts that I work with a lot of the training and a lot of the stuff that we've done with this. I'll name some of the faces off that I'm trying to look at everybody that's on here now. Who I can see now, we have Lieutenant Dave Cruz from Metro West. He's one of the TAC medics with us. Jamie Young, he's a battalion chief. He also works at St. Charles City, but he's an instructor with Engine House Training that's done a lot of stuff. We have Lieutenant Tom Batterop from Metro West, Jason Marin from Metro West, Captain Matt Seger from Metro West. A lot of these guys are all TAC medics. Also, Chief Tiemann, I see Chief Lauder, I think, was on here too. Both of those guys have done a lot of work with setting up our tabletops and doing a lot of the ICS training with our chiefs and everything like that. So they kind of have some more stuff to bring to the table that a little bit more than I work with some of the ICS structure and a lot of stuff. So that's a couple quick names. I think we have a couple of the officers from St. Louis County Police that are trying to log on, and due to the problem with the link, we're still trying to get some people on here, so hopefully they can jump on. But kind of start out, like I said, and I'll let a lot of these guys jump in as we go and as we talk about this. But the class that you kind of mentioned it, that we do with Engine House, so we started trying to get out there. We started some of our MACTAC training with St. Louis County Police probably – I don't know, I think Dave's on here. Dave and Matt and Tommy, you guys started this probably 8 years ago, you think?
Somewhere in that ballpark. It's been 6-8 years for sure, with every year being a step forward from the year past. We're trying to build on it each year and up to the point where we are now, where we're doing, active drills. Obviously, this spring was delayed because of COVID, but it was set up to be this spring. Would have been the 7th or 8th year, I believe.
Yeah.
Hey, Kyle, so, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but what's MACTAC? I mean, there might be people that aren't from our area listening, so that's part of the reason I wanted this show, because you got to challenge yourself, and I know nothing about this, so start simple. What's MACTAC?
Yeah, no, you're good. shit, I'm trying to remember now right off the top of my head. It's a multi-agent. You're asking me trick questions already, Jeff.
Multi-agency counterterrorism action capability.
Yeah.
Hey, if I'm wondering, if someone out there is wondering, I don't mind being the dumb guy to ask the dumb questions. And also, I saw Cap Montero got he's got on here as well.
He finally got on. So what Dave said, that's MACTAC. It's a lot of stuff. We usually just call it MACTAC. There's another one. I think Jamie, you said you guys did the RACTAC version a lot out in St. Charles.
That's so, correct.
Yeah. So a lot of these, from talking to Jamie, there's a lot of different acronyms and all this stuff that are out there that people develop stuff, and they're kind of all across the board. And some places use certain ones. And a lot of these, when, like, I sat down and talked to Jamie about, like, we do this one and they do the other one, at the end of the day, they're all pretty much pretty similar and the same, I would say. But the biggest thing that I found and that we've started working on, and why I call this bridging the gap, is what this comes down to, like, when we started training, is really trying to figure out what the officers do and what they're going to turn around and expect of us versus what we're going to turn around and expect them to do. That was some of the biggest stuff, and that comes down to ICS. The most of your police officers that are going to be showing up for this really don't do ICS, and it breaks all the way down to just using a walkie-talkie, using their radio, and some of that stuff that we found. So just kind of going through a lot of the stuff on the training level of really trying to figure out the differences of what they do versus what we do and what we're going to expect to show up and what they think we're bringing to the table and stuff like that, so we can get this everybody working together, very uniform to get in there. We all have the same job to get done, but it's two completely different ball teams on how we're going about this and what we're doing. So that's been some of the biggest stuff that we've been trying to overcome. If anybody's got stuff to add to that.
Well, I guess if no one, somebody was saying something, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Mark Flaughter. Just to re-emphasize Kyle's point regarding ICS, that's the most important thing, is getting the guys that don't do it every day to grasp the concept, so that when it comes to working the incident, they're not trying to handle everything by themselves, and that they're delegating so that they can maintain a reasonable span of control and they're able to work the incident more effectively.
Awesome. I think a big thing that is – go ahead. I'm sorry, whoever was talking.
No, I was just segueing. Go ahead.
I think a big thing that has helped with that portion of this is, you know, we've been doing this active shooter MACTAC training, like you said, 6-8 years, and then about a year ago starting with that ICS training over there with Chief Tiemann and everybody and Chief Flaughter, and that has been a big help on the ICS side. And I think Kyle and all the guys would agree, and the police officers, this is not knocking anybody, they'll freely agree that that's just not something that they do very often, that they don't live in that world, and a lot of that to them is brand new. And so I think as a whole, that has been a big help to when and if this incident happens, that we're going to get this thing at least started off on the right foot.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, we really – it was a huge eye-opener to me when we first started this a few years ago. And I tried to bring some of the cops on here. I'm not sure if any of our TAC guys have made it on yet or not. So they can almost defend themselves, because you got a bunch of firemen on here talking about the police side of things. But it truly is a huge eye-opener, and a lot of it was opened up to me whenever we started getting involved in doing this training all the way around, where some of the officers, like I said, goes down to not using their radios, and the way they use theirs is completely different the way we use ours on the fire side, to where the fire side, we train and really hit home on, hey, if I need to be able to use my radio behind my back and with my eyes shut to get to different channels, or I need to do all this and switch, you know. In the old days, it used to be to go to command A was all the way 16 to the right, and now we have our different banks and TAC channels and all that. But a lot of these officers, they that's something they don't even think about. They don't even do that. So that was one of the biggest eye openers of, you know, and we discussed this in the tabletop ICS training too, of, okay, how are we going to do in this originally sets off? Who's going to be talking to who? You know, we got fire trucks coming up and staging, trying to figure out what's going on. You got officers running into the building. And then that kind of goes into us trying to figure out who's where and accountability of everybody. And so just sitting down over the last several years and talking to the officers and talking to chiefs and people trying to figure out the best way to figure out communications and accountability for everybody. And then that, I mean, that's just the almost the tip of the iceberg before we start breaking down into, okay, what's the fire department going to carry? How are we getting guys in there with rescue task force and all this other stuff that kind of goes on with all that. So it's there's a lot that goes into this, and hopefully we can get a good conversation going here with all these other guys that are on here and kind of what they can bring to the table and their thoughts and ideas from talks that we've had with everybody.
So you're talking about how important communications are. So let's jump into it. It seems like a pretty good spot to start. Obviously, we have people from St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Charles County, so pretty good region, St. Louis region, so to speak. I know where I work, we can switch to the police zones. I don't know if they can switch to our zones. Maybe Mario can answer that. But what's kind of the consensus of how we're going to do that, how we're going to handle that? Just the company officers, just the chiefs switching. What'd you guys come up with in your drills and practice?
One of the current things we come up with, Jeff, is liaison each ICS position. So each position in the RTFs and your staging level managers and any position has an officer with it. So that way we're not trying to talk on their channels as much. They make decisions together because we don't understand the vernacular, the vocabulary that they use, and they don't understand what we use. Whereas they're rattling off a 22-0 something, we're thinking of Monarch Fire District when we hear that. And in this once-in-a-lifetime call, trying to understand the way they're doing things to make things really difficult. So the biggest thing we've done so far is just to marry those positions throughout the event, which helps it flow more smoothly.
Gotcha. So every group, and forgive me for not using terms, every group of firefighters is going to have police officers with them. And what's worked best in these drills and trainings is to keep the firefighters on their network and the police on their network and kind of go with it that way. And obviously in any type of active shooting, active killer type situation, I would assume the guys with the guns, the cops, are going to be in charge of our movements and where we go. So that makes a lot of sense. Anyone got any?
Hey, Jeff, I think that you just said something that's very important, and I'm not understand, like 100% do I know what everybody's level of training here is with it. But I mean, we can ICS and we can do everything that we want to death, but the major factor that we need to take into account is that this is a police operation. And while we have some semblance of control there, ultimately this is a police matter, and we're there is in support, at least in most jurisdictions in the area. And so that's very important for people to understand exactly just where we sit in a lot of the hierarchy in these things.
Jamie, let me ask you, I know we've talked a little bit over the phone in the past year or two about the differences between RACTAC and MACTAC and some of the stuff. The way we've been working it is, and it kind of goes right into what you were saying, when this incident starts, it's absolutely 100% a police incident. Obviously, we have an active shooter or something going on. And then, hey, Agnes, sorry, dog's whining. But the way we've been running it is you have the police, we've got a unified command, obviously, but we've got police running it. They're in charge until the killing stops and they've created that CCP. And then at that point, it kind of switches over to where we're the fire and EMS, because obviously now we've stopped the killings done. Now it's stopped the dying, as they say. And so at that point, typically we're turning it over and now it's going to be a fire EMS matter, and it kind of goes switches back and forth at that stage. Is that how you guys are looking at it as well?
I think in a best case scenario, Matt, that's how it would be. I think there's a bunch of little bitty truths that people need to understand when you kind of enter into this stuff. And, you know, the lot of the misconceptions that people has is that this is a SWAT operation, and this is not a SWAT operation, at least not for at least another hour and a half until this thing is going on. And so what this is the basic foot cops running this thing. And this is, you know, even if you can get a sergeant there, you know, you're really lucky if you can get, you know, in the first, you know, within the first few minutes setting some of these things up. And so, you know, this is when you look at a police thing, that's kind of where I'm getting at, is that this is a police operation until we get a lot of stuff set up, until that active killing, like what you talked about, is over. And then we can step in. But even in, we've even seen Marjorie Stoneman Douglas or whatever it was down in Florida, you know, how many times, you know, their firefighters were trained in this.
Mm-hmm.
And the police just time and time again refused to insert them into this problem. And, you know, so best case scenario, absolutely, it's a dual type thing. But we also got to understand where we sit in that hierarchy, because the last thing that we need to be doing is, you know, I don't know, creating a bigger incident getting in front, you know, get into a you-know-what swinging match, right?
Right. No, I couldn't agree more.
Couple of years of these drills has definitely decreased the chance of that happening. I think it's developed, especially since the tabletops have been started, it's developed that mutual respect. And law enforcement can kind of learn from how we do ICS, and there's a lot of questions asked by upper-level management of law enforcement to see how we do things. And that's the other hard part is, from the fire service, you're trained in ICS from day one. And the details, and an ambulance crew can run a situation until more chiefs get there if they're all somewhere else. Law enforcement operates in that single individual entity a lot of times. They don't have that. But as they come to training, they see that and they learn that. And we're still trying to figure out, from a law enforcement perspective in St. Louis County, what the first responder or the first officer who's going to take the ICS level is. They don't have it. There's no designee that says, hey, the first in supervisor or the first in mutual aid supervisor. We're still working on that. Still kind of trial and error, and we haven't come up with that magic number yet.
Where's Corey when we need him to talk about that?
I know.
Forgive
me.
Adding on what Dave said.
Whoever was logged in as 4488 had their hand raised for something.
No.
Go ahead. Floor's yours.
Maybe.
I will say this. I'd like to hear, for my selfish reasons, I'd like to hear from Mario at some point to see where we stand in all this. For you guys that are all trained in this, when you use your acronyms and stuff, though, assume that none of us don't know any of this, because I don't. And so if you could explain some of that, I think it would be very beneficial for people that have no training in it, and our target audience, further people coming in trying to get information on where to get going, if that makes sense. So Mario, if you can unmute yourself and maybe give a quick synopsis of your experience in our training.
Hello?
There you are.
Am I here? Can you hear me?
We hear you.
All right. Well, I can tell you this. In St. Louis City, and we've run into issues with really more so on the police department side with upper brass, because as you guys were alluding to, it is a police incident, and they make it very known that it's a police incident. So we've done training scenarios, and part of it is the, you know, that first arriving street officer, a lot of the street officers, they aren't trained or they don't have the knowledge of what our capabilities are and what our role is in an active shooter incident. So what we found is a lot of times it happens that police officers, they're kind of want to do their job and do our job at the same time. So what they do is they go in And it's typically what happens is the first person they encounter that's injured, they start removing those individuals. And it's a hard sell to try to explain to them. That's not your job. Your job is to protect that area so we can get our crews in those areas to get those people basically medical attention. Because it's one of those things that, like, we don't carry guns. You guys have the guns. But a lot of times what ends up happening is they go in and basically fire EMS sits high and dry. It's staging, and they don't do anything until the individuals are brought out to them.
Mario, I know we spoke about this a while back. Have you guys had the opportunity to do any of these active shooter trainings in the city? I know you guys were hoping to have a couple of these incidents. How many have you had?
We've had a couple. And this is just my opinion. On the fire EMS side, it goes great. But it gets into, you know, like I said, police upper brass, they make it well known. Hey, this is a police incident. This isn't a fire EMS incident. And we run into problems where we try to explain to them, hey, this is how we feel these operations should be running with these rescue task force setups. But I think a lot of it is just they're not that knowledgeable on it. And I think they are – I don't know if they're afraid, but they don't want to – I don't know if they just don't want to grasp that concept that a rescue task force model is a good thing. And I'm not bashing the police by any means, but I know in conversation with our upper draft, it just seems like a lot of times it's because the police want to be in the forefront on the news about these type of incidents, you know, and it becomes an ego thing more than anything else, in my opinion.
You know, one of the ways that I kind of overcame that initially, not this year, but the year, last year, was we came up with three between us that were designing the exercise from law enforcement and fire and EMS. We came up with three methods of which are the kind of top priorities or the top objectives. Neutralize a shooter was one, save lives and treat the injured victims is two, and then gain situational awareness related to the gaps. Was the third. And if we could address those three things, we knew that we were on the right track as a collective team from fire, law enforcement, and EMS. When we talked about that, we said, you know, of those three things, what is the way that, what is it, how are we judged by this? And we all came up with, obviously, it's the amount of lives lost in this at the end of the day. And once we kind of got to that point, we understood that obviously, you got to neutralize the shooter. We can't go in and save lives until that's been accomplished. How do we support while they're running those beat cops in? How do we support them from an ICS structural standpoint? How do we set that up for them? How do we help them with that, with maybe that one sergeant that's outside until they get their command structure or their command officers there? How can we help them, and how can we become a part of the solution? Once that team kind of developed, it wasn't a law enforcement team. It was a unified command team. And it really did actually come together in most incidents, not all the time. You've obviously got personalities that sometimes, as Mario said, that doesn't always work. But most of the time, we delivered it 22 times this year and the same amount last year. It came together because we kind of started off with, there's too much to do, not enough people to do it. How do we start, and what are the primary focus points for us?
Let me ask you guys this. When you guys in your training or your evolutions that you guys done, you guys don't make entry until the shooter is neutralized?
He's either neutralized either as in he's been shot or he's been contained.
Right.
So we know that there's a area that we can get to. And to Jeff's point earlier, I said CCP. I should have explained what that is. Right. So for those out there that are not aware of this stuff, so a CCP is a casualty collection point, and that is where the police have found an area that they have a lot of victims close by. They can get those victims to them. They can protect that area, and there's access for us to get to egress out of the building with those victims. And so until they know they've neutralized the shooter, or they have them in wing C and we've got victims in wing A, just for as an example, we're not going to go in. So we're waiting for them on the radio to say, we've got a CCP located in an X location. And we know when they say that, that they have in some way, shape or form, whether it's shot or just contained the threat.
Okay.
All based off the theory of one shooter, which is, you know, 98, 99% of the time.
Right.
Dave, is that?
And,
that's accurate.
Okay.
And I like to, Brian Athens been several good posts over there. I think we answered some of the stuff with the ICS stuff, but he said it's hot, warm. They set up hot, warm, and cold zones, which to me makes sense for us because we all should have a hazmat background. And I guess his point is the rescue task forces will go up into the warm zone as long as they have two cops as protection, you know, and I guess everyone else can be in the cold zone. So that kind of makes sense. To put it in terms that the majority of firefighters should already know if you have any type of hazmat background. So good stuff. Thank you. Thanks for posting that, Brian. Keep it up.
Chief Team had put up some definitions for anybody that's curious as well, that kind of help as we talk throughout this in case we forget to mention when we name.
Yeah, I just saw that pop up. So make sure you guys got your chat box open. If you don't, one thing we glazed over in Kyle, are any of the cops on yet?
No, you know? The one, a couple of them are having issues logging on, so they all bailed. So I told we'd make fun of them, and I just text them what we were saying bad about them behind his back.
I was going to say they are cops. We can't expect them to do anything too crazy. Yeah.
I will ask real quick, Jeff, just because she was kind of texting me, and as we started with this, we kind of started with communications and stuff. The one person, Erica, that works at SSM, so we just had one of these in Maryland Heights, I'd say a couple months ago, maybe longer than that because my time frame sucks while I'm on quarantine. And they debriefed this, and she said their biggest stuff was some communication stuff. So I'll let her talk about it if she's unmuted that 44888 number real quick. I see if it's anything interesting. If she's willing to talk.
He should be on. It's unmuted.
Well, give her a chance to talk.
She's like Erica. You guys come back to the bar.
Erica. All right.
I guess it's not working.
Well, I was going to say, it's unmuted on our end. Her phone might be muted.
Yeah.
We'll give her one more second, and then I got a question.
Yeah, I'm getting text messages that says I'm talking and my phone's unmuted, so I guess it's
tell her to leave Voot or Gary and tell her to call back in, and we'll try and get back to her. I did want you guys to answer because Brian also put up in the chat, Dave had a hard time getting, I guess, just the regular street cops to get anyone from PD to say they're in charge. Have you guys all had that same problem? And if so, what are we doing? What are you doing on the fire service side to rectify that?
That's what I was referencing earlier, and we're still working on that. The importance, I think, there's some other models around the country. Myself and Lieutenant Vatterott have done some teaching where they call it the fifth supervisor, basically, or first supervisor, a guy comes in, takes over. But we're trying, we've had the discussion, we've talked about having the first mutual aid, because when they get there, and it's gotten a little bit, in recent years after Parkland, nobody, there's not an officer out there that wants to be outside, because they don't be the one that gets caught not going in. So that caused some issues. But now we've, with the implementation of our tabletops, we stress the importance of how this is not going to work and how we can't stop the dying until we had that communication built up with fire and EMS working and police working together. So we don't have a dead set person yet. PD's working on that from St. Louis County, but it's still kind of a work in progress. It's just, we're just kind of relying on somebody to step up and do so, or that first in company officer communicate with our dispatch and contacts their dispatch and says, hey, go meet that big fire truck at the corner here and here and talk to that guy.
Yeah, and I think we got to cut them a little slack because we're all used to going everywhere in groups, and the majority of the cops in this country are by themselves. And, you know, there's no doubt, you know, when I get on a fire truck, who's in charge of that fire truck and who's in charge of that battalion. And, you know, they might be, you know, just knowing a little few friends that are cops or whatever. I mean, they may be 10 minutes away from their sergeant, you know, where most of the time we're two arm lengths away from our company officer, you know? So.
Well, something else, Jeff, that you're, for the most part, I mean, outside of probably St. Louis City and probably St. Louis County PD, you know, there's not a municipal police department that can run one of these things all by itself. And so, you know, if this were to happen in, say, Creve Coeur or Chesterfield, you know, you're going to have officers coming from all over the place. If this was to happen in St. Charles City, you know, we would have St. Peter's police. We'd have St. Charles police. We'd have St. Charles County. Chances are we'd have people coming from across the river. And so that just only convolutes that whole command thing even more as it goes on. I know that when we did our training here at St. Charles City a few years ago, we specifically focused, the training session was held in for our guys, but we specifically focused our attention on to those sergeants and lieutenants that, you know, the people that would hopefully be taking charge, and trying to get them to take a hold of this situation and start to do it. And I think what Dave talked about is that first in company officer, that second in company officer, getting to that officer that's in charge as fast as possible and come alongside them and, you know, guide them through, you know, what we can do and what our options are.
Jamie, it's ironic you say that I couldn't agree more. And St. Louis County is a perfect example of that. Like you said, there being so many different, not just 43 fire departments or fire districts, but there are, you know, how many different municipalities with PD. That's exactly one of the issues we've run into when we've talked to St. Louis County and said, you know, we all have SOPs and POMs that tell us, you know, okay, if you're the second in on a house fire, this is what you're going to do. If you're third in, you're doing truck work. Everybody knows these things. But with the police, it's just so different. And they are not set up like that. And we've tried and tried. And Tommy and Kyle and Dave know I've got myself some dirty looks a couple times because I've tried to push that point that we need to have a person identified who's going on the police side, who's going to stop and set up command. Because until that happens, it's just going to be chaos. And the problem is that, like Dave said, nobody wants to stop. So you're going to – if you have the first 50 officers, whether they're street cops or sergeants or whatever, if they all flood the scene, we've almost told them you're going to damn near have to step in front of a car or tackle somebody to just say, hey, tag, you're it. At least for now until I can get somebody else, you have to be with me so we can set up command just so we can know what they're doing and they can know what we're doing. Because until that first thing happens, I mean, you're just kind of dead in the water. So we really tried to push, hey, let's talk about the second sergeant or whatever that person would be. But with there being all those departments, it's hard to say who that, you know what I'm saying? That makes it challenging for sure.
Absolutely.
And to add,
I think Panarot had something also.
Go ahead, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're up.
Am I on? Yeah, what Matt was saying and what Dave was saying, you know, although it is a police situation as it starts out, of course, when that first truck, if I arrive in that first truck in, like they said, you know, we are, you know, at staging, and that's going to be the first place we're going to marry up with the police officer, which will be pretty quick. Then actually, they're looking for us to kind of run all that stuff outside and to get all those teams ready and everything. So, I mean, we got a big job to do out there while they're, you know, going in with their, you know, until they set up a CCP and all that. So, again, that's the first place we're going to marry up with a police officer, and that way we can get things going. But they're looking for us for all that, you know, and what the things we've done so far. And they're very receptive, you know, and they want us to do that. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense for me. I mean, the whole thing, though, when you guys are talking, and I guess I never really put it together, we're kind of blessed regionally. The way we train, I mean, we can essentially, a lot of you guys could end up in the city on a fire or move ups or vice versa. And, you know, bunch of us work at different departments and we kind of operate seamlessly. I assume that the police are not training quite like that at that level, the way we kind of have regionally. And I know you can go other places in the country and maybe even the state and their fire departments aren't as good as we are in the St. Louis region. But that sounds like, from the police perspective, something they need to work on fixing. Sounds like you guys are helping them steer the course, though.
And, you know, Jeff, I've seen, you know, kind of going outside of the St. Louis area, there's also a lot of disconnects, too. And that kind of goes back to the whole, you know, starting this with some of the tabletops and just working and training with the cops. They don't really understand half the stuff we bring to the table. Because, like, I think Jamie or somebody mentioned early on in this, this isn't the tech guys that we work with that are going to be doing this. This is your everyday beat officer that's driving down the street when this comes out that just got done giving somebody a ticket. Now he's thrown into this situation that he's trying to rely on this training that they do probably once a year. Whenever you get out with a lot of the cops from our area and you start getting these officers, this is one of these things. They're like, okay, yeah, I guess we're going to go through the motions and go do this training again, kind of what I've seen. So it's not your TAC guys. It's not your guys that are up on this and this is in their wheelhouse that I'm going to go in and do this. This is your everyday beat officer. So I put it to a fireman all the time. Like, we all have those firefighters that we work with that are riding the recliner that's like, oh, shoot, I hope I don't catch fire today because I'm with this guy and I know what he's bringing to the table. So that's kind of how I put it to the firefighters. Like, this is how you need to look at your cops that you're originally going to show up with and that you're going to be dealing with is – these are your everyday beat cops. Not that not every beat cops like that. Most of them could be on their game, but it's not going to be your star players that are showing up to this thing most of the time. And then it kind of goes into where some of the other smaller rural places that we've gone to and talked, there's a huge disconnect between those. There's other districts like within half hour outside of St. Louis City that they don't talk to their cops and their cops don't talk to them. And we've brought this subject up, and there's one place that I've been talking to that's not too far from where I live that he's trying to break that and get this going. And their sheriff's department's like, nope, absolutely not. I'm not training with the fire department. It's not going to happen. So when you start getting into some of the more rural areas, and that's just kind of their thought process of the cops are going to do their thing, the fire's going to do their thing, and it's just a total disconnect. Until you can really hit home on like, hey, this is what we're going to bring to the table. And that's kind of what we've seen a lot. It was like that in St. Louis County when we first started this with some of our training and talking about, hey, we have to get ICS set up because this is what we are going to do. And the cops are looking at us like, no, that's not going to happen. We're not bringing you guys in to do this. To where now it's starting to turn a little bit, but then the tabletops, it still shows when we bring all of our officers and chief officers to it, and you sit down and talk to some of these guys and you explain to them like, oh, fire department shows up, I can give you pre-plans of the building and you can see where every exit, stairwell, and everything there is you need to know about this place, and half the cops are turning around looking at you like, what's a pre-plan? So, I mean, a lot of this stuff is just getting out and talking to those guys and getting that pre-plan going to where they can understand, hey, this is what we're going to bring to the table and this is what we can offer you guys. And that's what I've seen, a lot of it opens the police officers' eyes once they start realizing what we can bring and offer them to manage one of these scenarios.
I think you said it, Kyle. It's just that we're a tool that they really don't understand how to use.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot that, like I said, I've the tabletop scenarios that we did and for us, I can explain kind of the difference between our training for some of them that don't that are newer to this, and I apologize for not doing that before. So we do our MACTAC training that we talked about, where we're doing our hands-on. That's the firefighters, paramedics, and the B cops are going out. We're doing hands-on training where we're working together, going in and forming our rescue task force teams and actually working on getting people out. And the police are the same way. So the more we do with Engine House, we travel, what's the biggest complaint that firefighters have? Hey, this was a great class, but the people I wish were here are chiefs. they're not here. So how are we going to push this? So we kind of taken that and we switched it over and we do tabletop training. It's a little bit more friendlier so we can invite chief officers and from both sides in, and we all play together. And that's the best way to describe our tabletop scenarios, is to make it to where we can get chief officers involved. And that was one of the biggest things when I've sat down with some of these captains and lieutenants from the police side and explain to them, like, you know, when the fire, they ask, well, I need this information. It's like, well, the fire department has that. Well, how do you guys have that? Oh, we go out and do pre-plans of buildings. And like a lot of that stuff, they don't know how we operate. They don't know what we do. They don't know what we can offer, what we can bring to the table or anything. Or, and half of them didn't even know that we've already been training in the rescue task force. So when we show up, and for us, if you show up trying to get this unified command set up, depending on where your officer is coming from, they might not understand when you show up in a Tahoe for, I'll make fun of some of our chief officers, Jamie, and you got your Tahoe and you show up and say, hey, I'm in charge here. And they're trying to figure out why you're bothering them or what's going on with that. Some of the biggest stuff is to get that ICS and that unified command set up, and then just us throwing out like, hey, I got this information. I can give you this. I can give you this. I can set up radio channels and all the stuff we do every day that we take for granted. A lot of these guys don't understand that. And that's all the way up. I mean, that's not from your BCOPS.
Will Dave at one.
So.
What's up?
Kyle's exactly right. This is Mark Flotter again. Kyle's exactly right. Because I'm heavily involved with the tabletops. And getting the officers, both on the fire department and the police department, to understand what each other's doing and the capabilities of each other is really important. It also gives you a chance to meet somebody face-to-face, so the first time you're meeting them is at a tabletop and not in an actual incident. And that's one of the most important things that we discuss with everyone. This year we had the luxury of introducing some school district administrators and officials into the training as well. So it gave us a chance to meet the school district officials. So when this incident does happen at a school, we're not meeting their principal, their superintendent for the first time. We've already seen them. We know who they are. So they understand what we're doing and we understand what they need to do. And that's just the most important thing with the tabletop is getting that facial recognition and understanding of capabilities.
Another thing we did is, when we do our MACTech, actually hands-on training, the past couple of years, we've designed it to try and have regions come to training. So maybe you have a north region one day, you're shooting for northern police departments and northern area fire department. To kind of, like Chief Lauder was saying, to get that facial recognition so you know who you're dealing with. I think that's kind of helped out over time, too.
Guys, if I could jump in here, I'm down here in Springfield, Missouri, and our active shooter guidelines have just been in effect for probably about 2 years now. We did extensive rescue task force training with Springfield Police Department, Spring County, multiple EMS, and all types, dispatch, hospital officials, and our unified command post in the training
voice message system
went really, really well. But the actual event when we got there, PD, not to slam them, but they went back to their old school ways of just, like you say, it's an officer on the line that was inside trying to take care of a bad guy. We didn't have a lieutenant or a sergeant to go face-to-face with. I'm a battalion chief, and our protocol is to find the officer in charge and get that unified command post as fast as possible. When we did the training, it went flawless. PD loved it. They loved ICS. They know that we're the ICS experts, and they asked for more training on it. And we did multiple drills with Missouri State University. Went really, really well. But I'm just concerned, and we only have two, really, between county and city law enforcement agencies. Occasionally, we'll deal with Highway Patrol, where they're going to be in charge over the other two. But our speed bump, we had an active shooter in an underground storage here last fall. Fortunately, it was more of a domestic dispute and turned out not to be anything. But I don't think we ever even made radio contact with any of our law enforcement that were on scene until it was over. So that's our gap that we're facing. Like I say, in the actual drills, it goes very, very well because we've already got that command post set up. But I think part of our delay is getting a command officer from law enforcement, because they're not out in the streets like our battalion chiefs are here. Because our battalion chiefs are going to be there within, you know, 7 or 8 minutes, where it might be a 20-minute response time for PD. That's where our speed bump is.
Right, and don't feel bad. That, like I said, we've been doing this for 6-8 years, and we're still having the same speed bump. It comes up at every training, and even more so when we've started these tabletops. And to be totally honest, probably the day this incident happens, it's going to be a speed bump that day too. But I think the more that we talk about it and the more that we reiterate to them how important it is, I feel like it might be a small speed bump, not a big one. But we even tell, you know, when we're doing the trainings, the MACTAC trainings, which is the hand-on version, we might just tag a BCOP and say, hey, you're command. Because like you said, it may be the first 6, 8, 10 people there are just street cops. But we just need somebody to take charge for a moment and being, you know, we say command. But really what we need is we need somebody standing next to us so we know what they're doing and they know what we're doing. And we tell them, you know, yeah, that's great if it could be an officer, but it doesn't have to be. We just have to have somebody that's willing to stop and get this started. And that I think has helped a little bit, that they don't all just go, hey, we're not an officer, and move on. We let them know it can be anybody, just somebody that we need to get this ball rolling.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. I'm going to take that back to our chief here, because I think if we, you know, the police, they're going to have – basically two priorities, and I'm obviously not a law enforcement guy, but I think they want to stop the bad guy for one, and then they need to be helping up and working on rescues. And so we got to get somebody there that can just communicate and let us know the way we set up our zones of where the bad guy is and where we can go in and start our task forces going in and set up the collection points. But I like that idea of getting them with the mentality of an officer there that can just be our eyes and ears on their radio channels and let us know what's going on. That's a good idea.
Brian, if you'd like, we'd be happy to share the PowerPoint for the tabletops with you. So cool. Just let us know.
We can send the SOG too as well. Just send us an email address.
Okay.
Yeah, Brian, you can get at it.
Talking about some of the stuff with speed bumps and the training and different things. But one thing I didn't even think about till we did the last tabletop training and I was there, and sitting at our table were some of the police dispatchers. You know, we talk about the fire, the EMS, and everybody else being involved, but we also have to make sure to include the dispatchers, whether it's the law enforcement dispatcher, the fire and EMS dispatcher. They have to understand the same terminology and the same things of what we're requesting, the radio frequency, whatever it could be. But don't disclude them on some of the training, because they can be an important part of the element of the entire operation. So make sure to include the dispatchers with that also, with your training.
Oh, yeah, we've done that for sure. And we've done the active shooters. We've had, because our dispatch is a common 911 center, that it slows things down in the long run, but we've had the dispatchers, even hospital administrators, in with our active shooter drills and everything. In a drill, it runs really, really smooth.
They always do when you have ample time to prepare. Yeah. So that was a good point, Gary, keeping the dispatchers in the loop. And, you know, I'm just sitting back here as a layman, you know, as a line firefighter company officer, you know, the biggest takeaway I'm taking from you guys is we need to develop relationships with these street cops on our everyday runs. You know, we don't get cops a lot in the city on medical runs, but we get them on accidents and stuff like that. And they come block the streets at fires. You know, you take that time when you're picking up from a fire, or, you know, you're wrapping up an accident, to introduce yourself and, you know, talk to these cops, invite them by the engine house for a cup of coffee. And, you know, and then you could kind of get into some of this with your area cops. I mean, they're going to be the ones you run with anyway. And I think you can't really go at them. You know, we've had times where they, you know, they kick in the doors and, you know, try and do a search real quick or something. And, you know, once you explain to them, like, hey, obviously you're going to do that, that's why you signed up, but shut the door. Or, you know, they park in the way, and you know, everyone wants to get mad and holler at them. You can't just go off on them, say, hey, we need the front of the building because our ladders are only so long. You can't really stretch a ladder any longer. And if you develop those relationships before these big type incidents with the local level cops, I think you're going to be better in the long run.
I'll tell you what, Jeff, I'll add on to that. And as I pick on Tommy Vaderot here real quick, that guy has done a heck of a job with us and a couple of our small municipalities on doing it. And it took a while for me to realize what he was doing, but we go into like some of the stop the bleed stuff and just carrying tourniquets and all that stuff that we've started working with our officers and help. Like a lot of that stuff is still kind of foreign. And luckily in our area, it's changed a lot. A lot of our guys are carrying it, but we'd run like a chest pain call. And I was getting some of our local officers coming up to me and like, hey man, I got my tourniquets right here on my belt. And at first it's like, okay, cool. Good story. Like I'm, move on. And then one of the next ones, I get another guy comes up to me on a later on that day. He's like, hey man, I got my tourniquets right here on my shoulder. I'm good to go. It's like, okay, good for you. And you start running more and more of these calls where these officers that we run with every day that we have a pretty good relationship, we're doing this. It's like, okay, like what's going on? Like, oh, Tommy comes up all the time and kind of mentions or asks about it and talks about it. And I guess in the law enforcement with the guys that we work for, that started spreading to where they've started mentioning that. So at least it's in their head now. And that's just one of our guys out of our department just making comments on calls of bringing it up and kind of just making comments to some of these guys. But, I mean, it's spread. Unless, Tommy, you got more to add to that, unless they're just completely lying to me about it. But that was the story that they all told me every time they came up and told me they had tourniquets was because you kept picking on them about it. So,
no, that's very true. Because when we first started kind of getting into this several years ago, you know, none of them really carried them. And it's transitioned now to where it is that conversation. And honestly, you know, like other people said, it's teamwork, getting to know the guys. And, you know, years ago it was separated. And now, you know, I don't care how many times we go on a call, how well you know the guy. After the call, I always say thank you for being here. It's teamwork. It is a team. And then I look for their tourniquet, and they pretty much know it's coming. And there's a few – you know, a few guys that you run into that, you know, are getting their tourniquets, but we take care of that. But no, it's very important because when you get there to, you know, to this active shooter situation, you know, like somebody had mentioned earlier, you know, it's not the TAC medics. It's not the TAC guys that are running this, that do the training all the time. Some of these people go through MACTAC once a year, and the fire department, I mean, is going to be a key role in probably telling what a lot of those guys to do, you know, what to do in the very beginning as far as getting things set up, your strike teams, their entry teams, because, you know, that first truck there, you know, somebody's got to take care of staging, and if there's no other trucks there, which we're lucky because we got a lot of trucks, you know, in close vicinity, but someone might have to, you know, take care of that command position as well with one of those police officers to let other people fit in. But once we start that in the staging, you know, we're getting the strike teams, you know, the contact teams, we're getting the rescue task force teams, all that can be set up so fast and ready to go. And then when they call for it inside, man, it can be a fluid situation. But anyway.
Oh, that's awesome stuff. I'm, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys may know more. Didn't a street cop save his life last week by having a tourniquet with him? You know, didn't he get shot?
The Webster Grove.
Webster.
That was, I was talking to some of the guys, and that was a sabotage situation. He rolled up on that motorist, and he had his partner behind him, and he got out to approach the car, and it was a sabotage, so obviously there was gunfire. His partner was the one that got the bad guy. And so the first guy self-administered his tourniquet, and, you know, this partner dumped him in the car and took off. So, man, this is a lot of the different things. There's a lot of them. I mean, that Dave and Matt and all these guys have that when we teach, we show videos and we talk about. And on the streets, when we're making friends and keeping those communications going, all these things are brought up. So now the Webster Grove thing that you're talking about, that is it's our new thing to talk about, my new thing to talk about. And I just can't tell these guys, you know, hats off to those guys for, you know, being able to have the tourniquet, you know, being able to put the tourniquet on and use it, and then they shut down the highway and didn't wait for EMS to come. They dumped him in the police car and got him to where he needed to go. So hats off to those guys, man.
Yeah, and on that, people don't know that. And on that note, that police officer was actually a city firefighter's brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
I hadn't heard that, Mario.
Yeah, it's actually a city firefighter's brother.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it had a good outcome, and you know, that's the importance of tourniquets and stuff. And I want to jump into equipment next. That was going to be my next question. But well,
Jeff, real quick, I got one thing. We've been talking, and most on here are very comfortable or familiar. We're fortunate enough to have Firebase DMS. That's another thing. When you start talking about relationships and training, some of the places of, you know, we went around and talked to about this class, and Kyle can probably even go a little bit more in depth, places that have private EMS or the EMS is totally separate from the fire service, they have problems working everyday calls together. So what's going to happen whenever you get to the magnitude of this incident? When you start talking about bringing down barriers, if you're an agency that works with a private EMS agency or agency that have a very good relationship, that's one that you need to build also. The fire and police are important, but the fire and EMS is important because they're another portion that if we don't get them on the same page, that they can really throw us off into left field in a hurry and really affect the outcome of the operation.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true. And I know I've had conversations with